hello and welcome to Sonic Talk, the podcast that, a weekly podcast, I might add, that talks about music technology, all the kind of stuff surrounding that, live performance, electronic music, anything we could think of and shoehorn into the overall umbrella. If you want to find out more about what we do, because we do reviews, we do lots of other things too, interviews, that kind of stuff, please do subscribe to the channel, Sonic State. There should be a button somewhere around this if you're watching this on YouTube. Otherwise, please do subscribe to the iTunes feed or any of those other things. I'm on a subscription drive, as you could probably tell. Also want to say thank you very much to our show sponsors. We've got a competition coming up from Isotope later on, who will be giving away another copy of Ozone 7, and also you'll be able to find out who and if it was you that won it last week. I also want to say thank you to UVI. This is the Falcon, which is their creative hybrid instrument. If you want to check it out, head over to uvi.net and check it out. It's quite a monster. Anyway, welcome everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome to the chat room. We've got a nice, fulsome chat room, as I like to say, although I know it does irritate some of our listeners that I say that every week, but there you go. That's just one of my little habits and foibles. Anyway, welcome to everybody. We'll say hi to Mr. Dave Spears, who's over there in his synth cave. And if you were watching last week, you might have noticed there was a great big hole just above his head where the Oberheim 8 voice, which I mistakenly called an OB8, was, and now there's a massive hole underneath it. Are you kind of what's happened to the, that was a CS80 in there, right?
Yep.
What happened to it? Oh, look at that.
No, it needed tuning.
Can you not do that yourself, or do you have to get it done by
It needed tuning. I'm trying to think what else it was. There was like three things that were annoying me a bit. Tuning. Oh, yeah. One voice was, the filter was opening. Voice 5, mix 1. And what was the other thing? The ribbon strip had started to kind of play up. I was kind of pressing it in one place. And it would kind of always be a bit of, it wouldn't start, because the great thing about the ribbon is where you press it, that's the starting point. But it would always move like a semitone or something like that. And it was like, wah! So, yeah, that was entertaining, getting that down the stairs. Two old Crocs. Well, one exceptionally old Croc. It was pretty bad, I can tell you.
I'm surprised you haven't got a winch and like one of those kind of Dutch canal side properties with a beam out, so you can just push it out the window and download it. I think you're thinking about that, aren't you, though?
I did on the way back, because I was like, okay, so after Kent's fixed it, we've got to get it up the stairs. And both Chris and I were looking at each other, taking it down the stairs, going, we really are too old for this. And I thought, yeah, that was a sensible idea. But the idea of, you know, kind of winching it up and then trying to get it in through the balcony bit here, it's very scary.
That's quite scary too, I suppose, particularly with something as temperamental as the CS80. But that, then, I mean, this is one of the things people are sort of moaning about, the new breed of analogs. But the thing is, you know, they don't do that. I mean, they're not the same, obviously, but there's one thing that they don't do, and that's generally fall to pieces and require constant servicing and all of those things.
So that's why I quite like a little mini log to put it against the four voice part of the four voice, to kind of go, look, it's this big, it's this small and it weighs this much, whereas this is this big and it weighs this much.
Ah, well, anyway. You're talking mini-log. I'll tell you a bit about that later on. And Mr. Mark Tinley, who's there in sunny... I forgot to say, of course, G4 Software, makers of fine software instruments. Sorry about that. And Mark Tinley, who's there in his guitar cave, man cave, with padding on the walls for the acoustics. Everything, how are you, Mark?
I'm very good, actually. I am very good. I did something interesting this weekend, but I've forgotten what it was. I bought my 7-string guitar now.
Oh, did you? You got it. Excellent.
Been experimenting with it. It's quite good fun, actually. I think I do need 8 strings, actually. Now I've kind of come to the conclusion that I need to go for the full 8.
Why not?
And I bought a Yamaha Porter Studio this week as well, which
Lord.
Really good fun.
You're going fully analog.
I don't know about that. I know. I just suddenly thought I've got loads of cassettes and like a huge box of cassettes. And I'm thinking, well, actually, if I put all those in the computer, they could sit on a little hard drive somewhere and I don't need the cassettes anymore, do I? So
So you're going to start that cycle once again. You'll do a load of stuff on 4-track, then you'll put it in the computer and you'll go round and round and round, that whole kind of like,
Actually, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to cue clone the 4-track, because I figure that if I clone the EQ off the 4-track, I can just make things sound like they're on the 4-track anyway, can't I?
So, well, it's the tape saturation, I'd imagine, as well. Yeah, but yeah, why not?
And I'll cue clone the Dolby and I'll cue clone the DBX, although that's a compounder thing. But
interesting thought. Yeah. You'll have a library of...
What I actually want to know is if there's a plugin that will re-Dolby things if you don't switch the Dolby on the machine. So if I transfer everything and put it in the computer, can I then drag a VST plugin on that will do the same thing as switching the filter in?
That's an interesting idea. I'd imagine I'd imagine that would be an expensive thing, because the Dolby license is not a cheap affair, I believe. In fact, I've just introduced Rich here because I saw him nodding in agreement at that very thought. I'm guessing. Anyway, Rich, how are you, Rich? Are you well?
Yes, thank you. Very well.
Excellent. Rich Hilton, of course, keyboard player with Chic, and also Nile Rodgers studio guy. I'm sure you probably... Do you remember when... was it Dolby S? Was it... What was the... There was the posh Dolby, the last generation of tape Dolby that was introduced, that it was... And it was the one... There was C, wasn't there? There was S, and it was like, if you had somebody sent a multi-track or they're working on an S project, it was a nightmare because you had to hire a rack of Dolby S 24s, and it was really expensive.
Sounded good, though.
Yes, quite possibly. I don't know if there is a plugin. I don't know if you know if there's a plugin for a Dolby decoding or encoding, do you?
I don't know. I'll bet you there is, but I don't know.
Ah, well, there we go. Maybe the chat room.
For Dolby B, there must be one for Dolby B, because that's on everything.
Maybe. So
the cassette one, isn't it? Yeah.
Must be getting to the point where some of that stuff is going to be out of copyright soon. Can you have copyright passing on patents, as you can with... publishing? I don't know if that's the case. Probably not. You renew it, don't you, I guess, with a patent? That's a question that I don't expect anybody to have the answer to. It was just a general thought to the atmosphere. Anyway, let's get on. This is interesting, I think, because Mark, you brought this up. Let's just play this. This is a video from a chap called Living Room Gear Demos, and this is the new iOS Music Memos, which is a really interesting idea. It basically takes your demos, you play in, and it analyzes the chords, adds drums and bass. And he's just trying it out on classic rock tracks. Drums aren't loud enough for my liking. So I think this is Iron Man, Black Sabbath. There we go. I mean, and et cetera. It didn't manage all of them. He started getting into some really weird time signature rush tunes, and it obviously couldn't handle that at all. But it's a really interesting concept, the whole idea of music memos. I mean, I'm kind of not focusing an awful lot on iOS stuff these days, but this thing struck me as quite a good idea. Basically, it's just a very simple extension. It's kind of like the voice memos, but you sing into it, it analyzes the pitch, it gets the chords out of it and the meter, and then allows you to add backing tracks to kind of immediately kind of get working on something. And it just seems like a really good idea, because you can then take those and bring them into GarageBand or into Logic and carry on working. And Mark, you brought this up, Mark, and you seemed quite excited. So
I'm very excited. I'm very excited because I've used the telephone as my main means for writing music for years and years and years, like starting with the Nokia phones. And on the Nokia phones, you'd have to sync it all up to your computer and drag the thing in and convert it from some weird AMR format and then drag it into Pro Tools and then try and find the loop and then... I don't know. It's a sort of a fairly arduous process. So what seems like a great idea, oh, I've got this melody, I better sing this into my phone, then turns into something that can be quite convoluted and take quite a long time to turn into something useful in the studio. Though, of course, I could have just recorded it into the computer thinking about it, but I didn't do that. What I love about this is that I can have my phone... and I've been using all sorts of different things like 4-track on the iPhone and iTalk recorder. And again, that means I have to think about how I'm going to get it into my software on the computer. This is brilliant because it syncs with iCloud, and GarageBand looks in iCloud for projects anyway. So I've been singing in it or playing the guitar into it, and it cuts it up and loops it for me straight away and gives it a tempo. And it's actually fairly accurate, and I've been getting some sort of, you know, fairly good starting points from it. So
does it follow tempo if you vary it? Does it kind of track your tempo, or does it try to conform it?
It seems to, maybe it just breaks it up in weird ways. I think it expects maybe that you are going to be fairly uniform, but talking into it's quite good fun.
Oh, that's
if I use it to start talking into it, it plays drums and bass to me talking, which is really strange.
Instant beat poet.
Well, it's the new TV mania, I think.
That is, I mean,
it's just cool. It's just simple to use, and it integrates. So
what iOS version are you using? Because I didn't actually bother to do the research to find out what it minimum requirements.
I'm on an iPhone 4S.
Ah.
And I'm using whatever the latest one, the 4S, will go to. I think it's 9.
Okay.
I know it messed my phone up completely when I first changed to it, and it's taken, you know, 3 or 4 updates for it to stabilize, but on the iPhone 4 anyway, because I don't think the iPhone 4S is quite fast enough for this operating system. But I mean, you don't need to be on the latest. That iPhone 4S has got to be 4 years old now, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's impressive, actually. I don't know. So yeah. I know, Dave, I mean, I know we've talked at length in the past about how we kind of start ideas and what we're using for mobile recording and all of that sort of stuff. What's that? Is that it? Or is that...
That is it.
Have you been using it?
Yeah.
And can it keep up with your jazzy notes?
It's very interesting. It's a kind of mixture of really clever and utterly hilarious all in one package, really. I'll tell you what I did. You know, I don't know whether I said it last week, but migrating old stuff over from the old computer to the new computer, I've kind of got this law where I can only migrate a tune if it's finished. So it's prompted me to finish a load of tracks.
Right.
So what I did was see how it could track vocals. So I just took an isolated vocal from a track I've just ported and finished and put it into it, and then compared the backing tracks. And that was just like, it was funnier than watching somebody fall over on ice.
Were they any better than yours?
That's debatable. I would say no. Others may say yes. No, it's really interesting. It's the drums that make me laugh, because so I just put in a little chorusy vocal part. It's the drums that make me laugh because like when you finish, it tries to come up with an ending, which just sounds like, you know, drums falling down the stairs sometimes. Yeah. But in terms of tracking, actually, once there's a stable rhythm, so if you're singing rhythmically and, you know, your timing's reasonably good, it will track it well. I mean, I was pretty impressed. And certainly in terms of tune, what was interesting is the track that I took just has, you know, kind of fifths acoustic bass line, which is really simple. And I thought, surely this will be able to kind of go to work that out because it's fairly straightforward. But instead, it put it into a kind of weird shuffle time.
Oh, well, it handles swing then. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it kind of put it into this sort of old bluesy shuffle thing. I was like, oh, I don't like. It would be really good if you can have options. And it's just like, I don't like blues and I don't like 12 bar and stuff like that. And then it would avoid those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to come to Rich next, but he seems to have dropped off the planet, which is bizarre, seeing as you were the one who was saying that you might have internet connection issues. But I can see. I mean, I guess the thing about this is there's, if you could imagine, there's a simple or a relatively simple way. Ah, here we go. We got Rich back. There's a relatively simple way to just mumble or start a tune, and then you can throw it in, and you kind of, some of the hard work is done. I'm guessing, Rich, if I come to you for somebody, or I try and come to you for somebody like Niall, you know, or whoever, who's actually got the ability to play really well in time and can do some interesting stuff, as long as the timings aren't too complicated, this could be a good starting point. You could just kind of throw those files into a DAW and then start it all off. Have you had any? Are you starting to think about how this might work. While you're speaking, I'll go and see, make your image bigger. He's got it.
Yeah. I played around with it this morning. I didn't do the rap thing that Mark did. It sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to have to try that. But yeah, it's a cool sketch pad for musical ideas. I'm not so sure about the drum and bass thing, but maybe.
But just I suppose the thing is gridding it up and being able to analyze it to a degree is a good starting point.
Right. Well, it's not unlike that IK thing we talked about last week in that regard. I can't remember what that was called. But apparently analysis tools are coming smaller and cheaper these days, and people are putting them to good use.
Excellent. I think this is one thing I'm thinking, well, I'd actually quite like to have that, but I don't have an iPhone. I upgraded my iOS.
Purely for that.
Oh, really? That's a
normally
big...
I'll never do it until I know that everything is completely fine. But when Mark sent it through the other day, it was like, oh, come on, because it's 9.1 it needs.
Okay.
And I just thought, yeah, go on, take a risk.
Wow. That's something that's pretty interesting that's been able to get you to go to take that leap. So, we are starting to see a few more Android-type, audio-type apps coming up. So maybe, you know, we're not going to see a port of this, obviously, because why would Apple do this? But I'm guessing, you know, some of the phones that we've got, I mean, I've got, my fact, this phone is a quad-core, I believe, so it should be able to handle something or other, that sort of stuff. But it's just a question of the real-time nature of it. But, yeah, cool idea. And there's also updates to GarageBand as well, which kind of seemed, I haven't had a chance to look at that, but it seems to give it a more clip launch type of feel. They're a dread to use it. They use the, you know, more suitable for EDM production, which is an awful phrase to throw about no matter what. But it does look like that indeed may be the case. And some of the demos I've heard seem pretty good. But like I say, I haven't really been operating in the iOS world for a while. So I don't suppose anyone's tried that out. Have you tried that out on the iPad, Mark, or anybody? The latest GarageBand? I suppose it's probably not something that we would...
I have downloaded the latest GarageBand in my phone, but it's so fiddly, I haven't really gotten into any depth with it.
Fair enough. I suppose it's probably a bit early. I mean, these things very much tend to be outside of our scope because we're already kind of using the tools that we use, but a nice path to get to from idea to finish production anyway. Anything that helps?
Yeah, something that sends you off in another tangent. You know, I'm always using the phone. Like from driving, I don't use the phone when I drive. But if I'm parked in the car somewhere, having driven there, and I've got an idea, then I'll always use the phone and jot down ideas in that voice pad. Whereas this, it's like if I put it in here and just kind of, and if you don't like it, I think you can just keep doing it again and again and again until you come up with something that.
Oh, what? It'll have another go. It randomises the results of the analysis. Is that what you mean?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've put the same thing in about three times and got slightly different results.
Ah. I know, Rich, have you had a chance to play with it?
Yes, I have. And as you perform edits, it offers you the opportunity to save the edited copy as a new file so you can have versions.
Wow.
A list of versions there available to you as you're working on it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There's a little grid where you can do, like, I probably see it here, it's like loud at the top, complex, simple and quiet. I find all mine ends up being loud and complex.
Yeah, far right, swipe far right. It's like the musical version of Tinder.
Or Grindr.
Yeah, whichever. I don't know what that is. Right, okay, well, it feels like we're about halfway, it was 4:30, which is always a good time to introduce a word from our sponsors. Obviously, we're very keen to encourage you to check out Isotope Ozone 7.
Mastering tools in Ozone and Ozone Advanced. Now, the latest Isotope innovations in Ozone 7 bring modern and vintage processing to the forefront of the music production experience. Updated for Ozone 7, Ozone's highly regarded Maximizer features a brand new frequency-specific IRC4 algorithm that delivers transparent mixes with less pumping and distortion. Use it to smooth out an unwieldy mix or tame the kick drum peaks without affecting the vocals. The Dynamic EQ, Now, in both the advanced and standard versions of Ozone, lives and breathes with your audio, giving you more effective control over your sound without coloring your entire mix. Harness the precision of an equalizer and the musical ballistics of a compressor in one integrated processor. New for Ozone 7, vintage-inspired processing puts nostalgic tone at your fingertips to bring the creative color and character of analog hardware to your digital recordings. Glue your mix together and bring a natural feel to harsh-sounding recordings with the Vintage Limiter. Vintage Tape adds the dimension, warmth, and depth of tape saturation to your masters for a timeless sound that suits your creative vision.
He nodded, agreeing with that. Anyway, thank you very much to Isotope for the sponsorship of the show. If you want to check out Ozone 7, which I thoroughly recommend you do, there's a, I think it's a 10-day or possibly longer free demo, isotope.com with a Z /ozone will get you there. And of course, we have competitions. Last week, we asked you to tweet out the hashtag. Let me see, what was it? It was, hashtag 3D delay and Ozone 7 to at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. Because as we know, Isotope, I think it's till March the 10th, we're giving away a free copy of the 3D delay, which is a dual transient split signal delay plugin, which is actually pretty cool. It's been getting quite a lot of interest, not partly because of the interesting sort of fuzzy video 70s video interface it's got that seems to have split the community, but it's a well worth checking out. But so last week, we have a winner from last week, and the last winner, he's got a rather interesting Twitter handle. His Twitter handle is Krusty Booger, which I think is a kind of something to do with part of the nose. Anyway, at Krusty Booger, with the, that's B-O-O-G-A, you have won a copy of Ozone 7, so please get in touch and we'll get the Isotope Fairy to deposit a copy of it in your inbox. And we have another competition for this week as well, so if you want to win Ozone 7, we want you to tweet the hashtag FixTheMix, that's in one word, and the hashtag Ozone 7 to at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. That's the hashtag FixTheMix, one word, and the hashtag Ozone 7 to at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. All you've got to do is tweet that. You do need to be on Twitter, and you'll be automatically entered, and we'll pick it out via our incredibly complicated but very effective competition picking, winning, random number generator and social search thingy. Anyway, we do say thank Isotope for their continued sponsor of the show. Thank you very much indeed. Let's see. Oh, this really kind of blew my mind a little bit. I'll see if I can play this because it's not a video I can play because of the way it works. This is a TED talk by a guy called Sean Folmer.
But I'm also gesturing and manipulating objects. And that's really hard to do when you're using tools like Skype. And so using Inform, you can reach out from the screen and manipulate things at a distance. So we use the pins of the display to represent people's hands, allowing them to actually touch and manipulate objects.
So what you're seeing here is not, I thought this was kind of 3D holographic stuff, but it's actually physical.
And you can also manipulate
a physical thing with actuators that are poking up these rods to make these shapes.
As well as manipulate them.
And I'm not sure about the color. I guess that's something else that's happening. But
3D information
in a really interesting idea that they've got with this notion of variable physical interfaces.
Bring in existing objects, and those will be captured on one side and transmitted to the other.
These are happening to remote locations.
Between two places. So as I move a ball on one side, the ball moves on the other as well. And so we do this by...
This kind of rather blew my mind, really, because not only was there this, there's these large-scale table things, but there were ones with much larger blocks that had a tabletop that reconfigured itself depending on what you wanted to do with it, like, you know, iPad stand or whatever. I mean, it was all kind of quite gimmicky. And then the other thing was these little actuators, that linear actuators, which were like buttons on the side of a phone, which would stick up that you could then push in or have... you know, give you a profile. And there's just, the mind sort of boggles a little bit. And it's really, what's interesting about this is, I guess this is physical computing. It's not a software thing. It's not DSP. It's stuff that actually morphs to change shape. And I mean, obviously there's all sorts of amusing potential for what this could be used for, but I don't know if it has any legs. I don't know. What do you think, Rich? Do you think this has got a kind of a future, or do you think it's just way too complicated? Because the thing that's under the table is like a massive, great pile of electronics with all these motors. I think it's 900 rods that it pushes up for that particular thing.
Well, I was fascinated, like you were, by this, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around the possible implications of me being able to grab the mouse on your desk from here and move it physically.
Yeah.
That's a little hard. That's reminds me of an old joke about the, all those who believe in psychokinesis, raise my hand.
Very good. Well, you could do that. I mean, because you could do that stuff with obviously remote desktoping and all of those sort of things. But it does strike me a little bit of as an amazing solution, really impressive looking for a problem to solve that would be not being an architect or a 3D designer.
It's hard for me, like I said, to envision all the implications, because in addition to transmitting that information across a distance, he also had materials that you could form to a specific, to a non-specific shape. In other words, the shape of your choosing in order to operate it.
Yes. I think there's, I might be able to find that.
That
later.
Was pretty amazing too. You know, he had some substances that almost like molding clay that would end up being the transducer. For
oh yeah. There's this thing activity. As well. Hold on. Let me see if I can play this, because there's this other stuff.
A morphing device where you can go from something that looks a lot like a phone to a wristband on the go.
That actually has motors in it.
And
I think there's this stuff.
So you can make something like a game controller, and then the system will understand what shape it's in and change to that mode.
Yeah, that's possibly more interesting, I think.
Well, it's all interesting to me. It's just amazing stuff. And like I said, I need to think about it for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Try to get a handle on what the implications are and how that could be possibly game-changing and useful.
As I think somebody mentioned in the chat room, you could punch somebody in the face over the internet if you so desired. I don't know. I don't often have a desire to that. I can't speak for our viewers, though, and I'm glad that can't
somebody's
happen.
Somebody's cheek.
Yes.
I could pinch your cheek.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Dave, did this fire your imagination? Can you think of any synthesis or musically creative kind of concepts that this could work in?
No.
No. Well, okay. Well,
not off the top of my head. No. No, it was impressive. I have to say, I got sidetracked because I went, when you gave the link, it goes through to your site. And the first post is, because you said, could change everything. Or isn't that the title of the post?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And the first comment was, could change everything, will change nothing. And I just got lost in the sea of comments, which is why I don't go onto websites and look at comments normally, because I get completely sidetracked laughing hysterically. Medical stuff, definitely. Like you say, I mean, there's so much going on under the table, as it were. It'll get refined. Allegedly pornography as well, isn't it? I mean, it's obvious that I'm going to say that. It's obvious that somebody could. But I did read somewhere recently that actually pornography has been the kind of driving force behind loads of innovations technologically. And I thought, as soon as I saw this, I was like, yeah, well, there's another candidate, isn't it? Something's going to happen.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, there was some video later on of this large desk where the blocks were kind of this big, and you just sort of go, I want it to be, you know, I'm about to do some art, or I need to get my computer up together, and it just kind of created this little stand that, you know, so everything was in the right place. And that idea of sort of memory workplaces, or if you're hot desking, I mean, it'd be a hell of a lot of money to spend on, well, why don't you just move your pencil to the left yourself, you idiot, you know. But, you know, I get your point. I don't know, Mark, what do you think?
I'm kind of lost in all the automotive. I want a morphing motorcycle.
Oh, I'll tell you what could work.
So, okay, it can just change shape as I'm riding it. That would be kind of weird.
That'd be terrifying, yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'd have to see it. I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing watching something like that on a screen, but I'd want to see it physically so I could get my head around it and why, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. It does seem.
I need it in 3D, obviously.
Yeah, well, you need a demonstration.
On the screen,
don't you?
It's flat. You kind of like... It's kind of it does open up some new ideas, but it's
hard to know what they are, isn't it, really? I'll tell you one thing that could work. You could imagine it for changing the shapes of rooms and acoustic properties and stuff that would, but I don't know, but that might be a kind of Again, it's sort of a massive overkill where you could just have a motorized view, a couple of panels and stuff. But I don't know. It is. It's one of those solutions looking for a problem, I think, in many ways. But, you know, all the problems he found were somehow impressive. You think, yes, I'm sure that I could find a use for that. But when you analyze, you think, well, maybe I can't. I'm not sure if I can or not. But pretty cool stuff. I just want to say...
Here's one thing you can do. You can teach a computer how to... you could use it to reverse model things that human beings are very good at. So if you have a human being with an incredible skill with their hands, you could use it to learn that human being's skill and then reverse model it. And then when that human being dies, that particular skill still exists somewhere in a digital form.
Oh, I see what you mean. Actually,
you can use it to replace human beings, couldn't you?
Well, I'm not sure.
In other words, you create a mold by using it, and then you would be able to use it as a template to create a robot that could emulate the human being that could do the thing in the first place. I've gone a step further, maybe.
I mean, I guess robots could do that anyway, but it's an interesting idea. I mean, I guess the thing is it seems so physically complicated to achieve just because there's so many parts to it. It's not a simple solution to the problem that we can't discover what the solution is, what solution it might possibly be to, but it was cool. Anyway, well,
you could make a good additive synthesizer with it, couldn't you? An interactive additive synthesizer over the internet.
So they're all harmonics?
Yeah.
Ah, good point.
Or waveforms,
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Good. Well done. Dave gets the gets points for coming up with a solution.
I suppose the other obvious one is the old FFT thing that you used to see on the Fairlight as well, that you can just go in and, you know...
Sculpt it.
Mess with it.
I suppose you could.
Mm. The digital brownie.
Do you think perhaps that maybe Isotope will create an interface for RX4 or RX10 or whatever it would be by the time this technology comes? So then rather than just using your mouse and all those other tools that are quite useful, you just have this massive surface in front of you. It doesn't make any sense.
You could do Waldorf Nave with it as well, couldn't you?
Yeah, okay.
Or you could just reach into Nave and mess around with the... Same thing, really. But.
Yeah, that $4.99 app with a $250,000 table in front of you. I think that makes, yeah. But yes, I think that therein lies the problem. Okay, right. Well, let's go on to the next thing. This was quite an interesting story. This is there seems to be kind of news about SoundCloud and the financial difficulties that are in. I mean, this is one of those web services that, as musicians, you know, it's become part of the topography. It's just a service. It's software as a service. It's a thing that, you know, you don't expect to go away because lots of people post things up to it. You know, we used it in the past for competitions, for the theme tune. You know, it's a very useful service. And it's quite an interesting story. This is on Music Business Worldwide, and it's basically not looking like good news. The burn rate that they're getting through is starting to look like things are going to be coming to a head. I mean, I'm in no way saying SoundCloud is over or anything, but it made me think, you know, it's actually quite shocking. It would be like saying, well, Google's decided it's going to close Gmail or whatever it may be, and you just think, oh my god, what am I going to do? Or insert one of these other services that you might use every day or whatever. You know, the thought of something that seems this kind of integrated into the way that we do things in terms of music going away is kind of a really weird notion in many ways. And I don't know whether you know, the business insides and outs of it are maybe another discussion, but I don't know. I don't know, Rich, whether SoundCloud figures in your topography, but for lots of musicians, you just want to post stuff and get audio online. I mean, it is the way to do it. I guess you can use YouTube as well, sure. But not video. It's a scary notion.
Yeah. I don't mean to sound like the Grim Reaper, but I've been saying for years that there's going to be a huge hole in history where this time was, because all of this data is so hard to fathom in a long-term perspective, whereas printed page, we can still open a newspaper from 150 years ago and read whatever it was. You know, it may be dusty, it may fall apart in your hand. But the point is that I don't trust the longevity of any of this data.
Well, how's that? That might be a lesson that makes sense. And I don't know what the whether or not it's possible to get all your stuff back from SoundCloud or any of these kind of services just so you could have it again in one place, all organized or not. I don't know if that's the case. It's hard to know.
I know. Now over to you, optimists.
Yeah, Dave. I mean, do you think? I mean, there are some. I'm not saying SoundCloud is it necessarily, but there are some things you just think this can't possibly go away. It's too important. It's too useful. It's too, you know, it's too part of the fabric.
That. Yeah, I remember that with iWeb from Apple.
Oh yeah, that.
It'll never go away, and then it was gone, wasn't it?
Yeah, that caused a lot of trouble for a lot of people. I think, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit of a moment. As I'm sure this may be. I don't know. I don't really have... I'm sorry. I just don't really have an opinion. I find all these business... these kind of weird, disruptive business models a little bit abstract. For me, it's all relatively simple. Try and make something that people want that you can charge a little bit of money for without ripping people off. And hopefully you can build something over a period of time, whereas... I get pitched ideas quite a lot because obviously people think like we're really rich or something mistakenly, and we get pitched ideas, and it's quite interesting listening to a lot of these ideas. And this disruptor thing is very ingrained in a certain generation, and I find it quite strange. It's like, can we actually create something instead of taking an industry and disrupt? I'm not saying that SoundCloud is that, and I don't really have that much of an opinion on it. We do use it. We use it for the business, and I use it for personal stuff. If it disappears, would I miss it? No, I'd probably just find something else. I don't know. There's too much. It's all very speculative, isn't it? Not just whether this is going to raise any money or not, but all of these things, all of these business models are really speculative. And
yeah, well, that's very true.
It seems to be the modus operandi seems to be start something up, get a shitload of VC, excuse me, and then pay everybody ludicrously high salaries for the work that they do or don't do. And then it's all done with some kind of exit strategy at some point in mind. And most people I know don't generally work that way. They just kind of try to do what they love and do a good job over a sustained period of time.
It is.
That makes me really old.
No, but the thing is, I can't remember anything. I mean, again, you know, if it were to go away, or just insert any service that you kind of use regularly, if it were to go to... I mean, I can't think of the last time something like this happened, apart from maybe MySpace, when MySpace just kind of fell off a cliff, didn't it? I think that was because another service came along that was everybody moved to. But generally, you don't get the kind of, right, we're shutting it, it's just going to stop. I don't know that this is likely to be the case or not. But I know, Mark, I guess in the same way that you know, we consider sort of the data infrastructure, you know, whether it be mobile phone services or apps that we use regularly that suddenly don't work anymore, you know, these are the sort of things that become part of what we have to deal with or will in terms of digital.
Yeah, it's ongoing, isn't it? I mean, the best course of action is to only use things which are sustainable. So that means bounce everything to stems, play real instruments, or if you use software instruments, bounce the results to stems and keep the MIDI. But here, so 1998, 1999, MP3s were sort of becoming this, you know, it was slowly rolling out. I got this bright idea that I would upload all of the music I'd ever written to this website called mp3.com. Does anyone remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
So over a course of a really long period of time, on a very slow modem, I uploaded all of my albums and things and tunes and just everything. I made it like an ongoing project, and all of a sudden it just went and disappeared. So and then it was MySpace after that. So I started uploading all my stuff to MySpace with a little less enthusiasm, having had the whole lot just removed from mp3.com. And then I sort of that went, and then I sort of started to realize that actually when by the time SoundCloud came along, I just don't trust it at all. I wouldn't put anything on there that doesn't exist anywhere else. So I might put stuff on there to showcase it to people, but there's no way that I'm ever going to pay for their service, because I don't believe that it will be here in the long term. And And I actually think if the news is out that it's floundering, the people who are paying for the service won't renew next year, and it's almost guaranteed that it will disappear within the next couple of years. So, where are we going to go next? Mixcloud, that's another one, isn't it? YouTube does seem to be the fairly stable one.
Second largest search engine in the world, apparently.
Of me smiling over my tune and put it on YouTube. But you know what? I mean, at some point, somebody's going to go, hey, Google don't pay any tax. And, oh, the National Health Service has a £2 billion shortfall. Oh, but hang on. If Google paid tax, they'd pay for the National Health Service. I use Google, and I'm pretty annoyed that when I go to the doctor, they're really busy. So, I'm not going to use Google anymore. And then if it went that way, and YouTube is basically part of Google, suddenly it would be, you know, that would go.
Well, that's true. I mean, social mobility can happen too. Yeah, I mean, that's entirely true. But I mean,
if the government nailed Google and said, right, you are going to pay all the tax that you owe for all of these years, and we're going to make sure that it's at the proper rate because we want to reinstate our health service, thank you very much, it would cause Google a massive problem. And then they could roll into receivership.
Or indeed any of these companies that have these similar kind of principles. Yeah, I take your point. I suppose it just kind of highlights the fragility of the digital thing, which is kind of what you were saying, Rich, the fact that it's so mercurial and transient. There's no real kind of solidity to any of it.
But does it matter?
But
who knows if anything can read a JPEG or a PDF file 50 years from now? Yeah. Who knows?
Wow, that's true. But on the other hand,
that's a very good
here's
point.
A piece of hardware, which looks really nice.
Hey, folks. Tyler from True Audio here. Today, we're going to take a look at the new Zoom F8 recorder. It's not often the words game changer are used. The Zoom F8 deserves this name. 24-bit, 192 kilohertz audio, 8 mic line inputs, 10 recording tracks, and dual SD card recording for a fraction of the cost of its predecessors.
It does look jolly nice.
The F8 could revolutionize sound for film and television. The LCD screen allows for quick and easy routing of inputs and outputs. If you want a larger view, download the free app and get all your transport controls plus mixer, pan, and fader level. You can also monitor input levels, current time code, and battery status. You can rename files, enter metadata, and set date, time, information directly from tablet or phone. The 3 different powering options means the unit won't power down in the middle of an important take. It's small, it's lightweight, and can run up to 12 or more hours on lithium AAs. It's a USB interface too for your studio sessions.
It
includes the power supply, so there's no hidden costs. On one side, there are 4 XLR and quarter inch combo jacks.
It just seems to go on and on, this. I mean, you know, we've all had, I mean, I record the show on a Zoom H4N, and there are various other Zoom recorders, but this seems to be a completely different level. I know, Rich, you actually, sorry, the Rich is on that one. Rich, you sent the link through. You maybe have the same love of anodized aluminium equipment as I do. There may be other reasons that you thought it was great too, which I'm sure there are.
Well, here's how it came about. My friend Alex, who runs the recording program at the college that my son Corey attends, has to go to Russia to record an orchestra. And we were having a conversation about what the best way that might be to do that. You know, most reliably, smallest footprint, cheapest, lightest, all that. And it was, I believe, yesterday that my son hit me with this link from his advisor, Alex, my friend. And that's where I saw this thing. And I do think, as a price point issue, this thing sells in America for $1,000. And the next thing, the thing that everybody uses, essentially, which is the sound devices, which is 6 channels, not 8.
Or Naga as well, yeah.
But apparently the sound devices is very popular, and that's a $5,000 piece. And has some magnificent features. Don't get me wrong. It's probably undoubtedly spectacular. But for $1,000 to be able to do all the things that this thing does in a less than 3-pound footprint that's, you know, the size of your hand, that's pretty amazing.
It is. It is very amazing. I know. Dave, you used to do or have done location sound recording. Presumably you were using sound devices or whatever it was, or Nagras or whatever. Does this, and from that perspective, does this tick all the boxes?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't go into all the time codes and stuff, but yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think what I was using. SQNs plumbed into, you know, umbilical cords into DigiBeater, I suppose. It must have been right back to Beater Cam. Anyway, yeah. But certainly in terms of doing, you know, the Bright Sparks thing, we started, when we started, I was using the H4N to capture all the audio. And then, of course, then you got to put it in the machine and line it up and get rid of the thing and get rid of ambience. I told the story about RX saving the day when all the flock of seagulls went past the window and we had the window open with Ken Freeman talking with his new teeth. So it was kind of, whoa, what's the birds and what's the teeth? Anyway, so yeah.
Flock of seagulls. I'm desperately trying to think of a gag to do with the flock of seagulls and an 80s soundtrack there, but I'm afraid it's escaped me at the moment.
Wishing. Yeah. And I like the way it mounted. I'd looked at a couple of things that mounted under things like, you know, 5D Mark IIs, but they weren't multi-track. They were multi-channel. They were two channels. I'd looked at getting the Lumix GX4, which is a 4K camera. Your Andy is like the worst influence on me, because every time I see him, he's got something new. And I'm like, oh, new camera, Andy. And when he showed me that A7S Mark II, where he had just opened up the aperture in the dark to something like 256,000, and it was daylight in my dark room, I was like, I need this. But it's hideously expensive, and I couldn't possibly justify it. So I'd looked at a GH4 Lumix 4K thing. And they do a little box that clips on the bottom, which is kind of similar-ish to this, but not as comprehensive.
Well, the Tascam
is
quite good.
It's mounted.
Yeah.
I mean, all really good. All really, really good. I was like, I have to say, I did drool over this quite a lot, and I shouldn't.
Yeah, it's, do you really have a need? Well, you could say that you do have a need. I mean, I think the thing for me that's really cool, because it's 10 channels, you've got 8 discrete record channels, and you've got one of those clip-on, like the Zoom H6, which have different capsules. You could clip that on, so you can use that to record a stereo ambience as well. I mean, that's really impressive. But not only that, in 4-channel mode, you can have it record 4 channels at your gain setting and then another 4 channels at, you know, 10 dB lower or whatever it may be. I'm sure it's configurable. So that when you get those inevitable clippings or whatever, you've got basically, this is something that's quite standard in a lot of recorders, location recorders. Now you record another version of what you're recording, but quieter, just in case the audio gets broken, because you're never going to be able to recreate that. Obviously, with things like RX and various other restorative tools, you can fix that kind of stuff, and it'll record to 2 SD cards simultaneously. So you've got all this failover built into the unit, and for that sort of stuff, I mean, that's absolutely critical. Because if you're taking, you know, a film crew out, and you've got all of this stuff going on, and the fail safe is, you know, whether it's a sound analog devices or sound devices, you know, 5,000 thing or whatever, a single point of failure, if you've got all that stuff built in, that's what's really interesting to me. It's kind of this could do an awful lot. I know, Mark, you do a lot of location recording as well. I mean, is there anything you spotted about this that makes you think but I mean, most of your stuff is binaural, so I'm guessing that's 2-channel, right, rather than multi-channel.
Well, first of all, I love it. It looks absolutely brilliant. But in my experience, Zoom stuff is really noisy. So if you compare any of the Zooms to any of the Sony recorders, the Sony PCM audio recorders, like a DM10 or something, DM10.
Right. Yeah.
There is a website which has got reviews of all different recorders, and they use the same microphones and they plug it into all the different recorders, and you can listen to the noise floor. So the noise floor on the Marantz portable recorder that I've got is horrendous. But you can get round it by using a different preamp and plugging it into the line-ins. But for this to be a standalone thing that works in its own, with completely by itself, it needs to have a really good preamp. So even the H6, I think the H6 is much noisier than the Sony stuff. And I'm looking through the specs, and I'm finding it really hard to work out what the specs are, because although it says the input noise, equivalent input noise, is minus 127 dB or less. You've then got 75 dB of input gain. So if you raise the gain by 75 dB, what does that do? That leaves 52. Does that mean the noise floor is 52? Because that would be really noisy. So it can't be that.
That's a good point.
I think your theoretical maximum noise floor that you could have based on the electrical conductance of a resistor is about minus 130 dB. So 24-bit audio outperforms electrical components. So the input section on this needs to be somewhere down, the noise floor needs to be somewhere down like minus 90 for it to seem quiet. And if it's any, if it's anywhere up further than that, then it's, because I like to record really quiet things. And
yeah,
And I've taken to using dynamic mics because they have no theoretical noise floor at all because it's only electrical. So the noise on a dynamic mic is only going to be as poor as the worst component in it. So I'd have to hear it. It looks absolutely brilliant. I share your love of anodized aluminium things. It just looks gorgeous. It's got all the features that you would expect it to have. I'd like to know whether the Bluetooth affects the audio and whether if I'm using my iPad to control it, which is another brilliant innovation. They've obviously gone out in the world and talked to people who do this kind of stuff and said, hey, guys, what do you need? And implemented a whole load of it. Without hearing it, I don't know. You'd expect at $1,000. I don't know. I mean, compare it to other in the field recorders you'd spend, what's the, I can't remember what the name of the best one is, the one that's better than Sony.
Yeah, here's the sound devices. I'm just looking
That's like $4,000 though, isn't it?
But this one has equivalent input noise, which is minus 126 dBU, 128 dBV, trim control fully up, which is, that means full input gain. That is pretty damn quiet. So that's full gain on the mic.
They're unbelievable, those. I mean, in that comparison of PCM recorders, that particular one is just the quality of the recording and the distance of the noise underneath anything that they've recorded is just, I mean, it has like a clarity to it that's like, wow, okay. That's like a whole different ballgame. So, I mean, if this is at that end of the spectrum, then this would be brilliant. But if this is as noisy as an H2 or an H4 or an H6, then I'm going to go like, okay, so it'd be great for recording rock. But if you're recording an orchestra and you want to get the quiet passages in between when the violinist is scratching his nose and you get from his nose.
It looks
brilliant in theory, but, you know.
Yeah, I think Rich wanted to come back there.
I watched a video by the people in New York called B&H, who are vendors of devices. And they did a comparison of this Zoom recorder with a very well-known and highly respected sound devices recorder. Okay. And they used the Shep's microphone, and the guy had playable and listenable examples. The upshot of which was there was not any perceivably greater noise component in the mic signal in the Zoom than in the sound devices, and furthermore, they sounded so substantially similar as to be almost indistinguishable from one another.
Well, that is impressive. If they can pull that off, then they're
in his video.
Are they going to? I mean, I guess are they going to be?
And then this is going to be able to make eight mic preamps, has it, or four?
Eight.
Yeah. Well, that's impressive.
10, I guess, if you plug the other thing in it.
I mean, I guessed it was high end when they're telling me that I need to put eight lithium-ion AA batteries in it, because that's going to cost me £25, isn't it?
Well, no, actually, because we use Tascam DR70Ds for all our show stuff, which are great. I mean, they're not in the same league as this kind of this high-end stuff, but they've got four-channel inputs. And yeah, the mic amps, when you're at the upper end of them, do start to introduce some noise. And we run them on four AA lithiums. And I didn't, usually we buy like 100 quid's worth of lithium batteries before we go to a show. I got through one set. I didn't even get through one set for NAMM, and that was 5 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that wasn't on the whole time, but it was, you know, I switch it on, I use it, do another film, switch it off, you know, whatever. And that's...
is saying it will record something like 3 hours of 8-track audio on lithium batteries.
Right. There are other power inputs. There's, you know, the main power, there's a USB input, there's a the Bauer, whatever it's called, little thing. I mean, you'd know about that stuff, Dave. You have special batteries. I mean, you probably walked around with a massive pile of lead around your waist. I remember actually when we first did shows, we were taking all of that sort of stuff around with us, and it was just, you know, I don't really want to carry all that stuff. I'd rather carry a spare pair of 4 AA's.
We were once, this is my favourite story, I can't believe that they made me do this. Maybe they just didn't like me. But we were in the Thames estuary, jumping from a kind of pilot boat to a big ship, a big cruise liner, which was brilliant because it's just full of Americans wearing plaid. It was fantastic. And I had a BVU 50 thing, you know, like a big digibeta recorder around my neck, pag lights, all the batteries for everything. And it was just like, we're in like, I think it was a 4-6 or something like that. And they're just kind of going, I'll just jump from one ship to the other. And I'm thinking, if I go in there, I'm just going to go down really quickly. Even the cameraman went, I can't believe we're doing this. After you.
Excellent. Anyway, looks like fun. Nice spot, Rich. Maybe I need to talk to Zoom and see if I can get them to sponsor us by sending us 4 of those so I can enjoy them, because they look like the sort of thing that would...
Good plan. Would they go nicely with the blue headphones.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath. It's not something, to be honest, my track record on these matters is not particularly hot. So, but if you're listening, Zoom, yes, we'd love to. That would be very kind. I'll furnish you with the addresses. That's no problem. But somehow I'm thinking perhaps not. Anyway, right. This was another one that I think you mentioned, Rick. This is the mini patch bay. This is sort of analog patch bay.
Welcome to the patch land. Tonight we will inject audio and control voltage modulation signals using the Patchulator 8000 mini patch bay, an analog step sequencer.
I like the way they've really tried very hard to make a patch bay video more interesting and funky.
Drum synth and 2 semi-modular synthesizers. Now let's patch this mamma jamma. Experiment number 1.
I'm not going to play the whole thing, but essentially this is like a little patch bay that you plug all your pedals in, your quarter inches, and then on the top you've got a little, you loop over and you have it as a patch bay, which is kind of cool. Because when I first saw this, I thought, oh, it's programmable. That would be really cool, because then you can just kind of go, yeah, this configuration. But sadly it wasn't. And I know, Mark, you were kind of like the idea, but I think, I don't know if you commented and said, well, would I spend $120 on a patch bay? But I mean, it's not a lot when it comes
to
patch.
Why would I?
I don't know.
When you said it was... when it said I ever wanted to change your pedal board on the fly, I thought, well, I've done that in the past. So I assumed that this was going to be some really cool brain-shaped kind of Rocktron kind of thing. The Rocktron is like a rack-mounted thing, and you plug all your pedals in the back of it, and then you just configure it via MIDI, and it will change the it will switch pedals in and out, and you can basically change your what's it called? signal flow by controlling it via MIDI. So I thought it would be something like that, or maybe like one of the old patch bays with the relays in. I can't remember what they're called either. AMS or something. AMS,
I don't know,
or something. So I was quite excited, but then it's just jacks and holes, isn't
yeah
it?
Yeah,
it
well, it
really
is
really do anything, does it?
No, that's true. But what this threw up to me is, you know, I remember obviously, you know, setting up when the mixer was the heart of your studio, you know, when we all had big mixing desks and large mini rigs and all that stuff, patch bay was absolutely essential. And now I just seem to have a massive pile of leads that I kind of drag out of a ball somewhere and kind of go, I need to patch this into it. And there's no patching going on. The patch bay seems to be almost a thing of the past. And it just seems to me that there's a really big hole in in what we all need as musicians, plugging our studios together or whatever it may be, where it would make sense to have some kind of routing on patch bays, whether it be something that's very easy to reconfigure or whatever, that doesn't seem to be happening so much. I mean, obviously, you know, you invest in a TT type patch bay or whatever. I'm sure Rich has got Bantam Jacks and all of that stuff, you know, because you would, because it's a fixed installation. But many of us have changed the way that our setup works and we no longer really use that. And it struck me that, you know, A, why is that? And B, why has nobody come up with a programmable patch bay matrix that you could use for CV control, all of that stuff? There doesn't seem to be any of that around. The last thing I saw was an SSL thing, which was really cool, but it wasn't DC coupled, so it couldn't do control voltage or any of that stuff. It just seems like there's a gap there. Are there any, Rich? I mean, I'm presuming you have a patch bay still, and it's all, you know, because these things take planning and time and all of those things. You've got to kind of get them all sorted out. Do you still use a patch bay, or do you tend to do sneaker net?
Here at home, I don't have a patch bay. At Niles, there's definitely a patch bay. Small, but fully functional and allows for any kind of routing you might ever want. The thing about it is, the whole paradigm is so changed now that one could argue that when I take my MacBook Air out and boot up, pick one, Ableton Live, Logic, whatever, Pro Tools, that it comes with a patch bay.
Yeah,
that is my patch bay.
That's very true.
So, in other words, unless you're traveling with a rack full of, you know, LA-2As, 1176s, DBX-160s, reverbs, and, you know, a bunch of, you know, Lexicon digital reverbs, unless you're traveling with that stuff, then you basically, your patch bay is in whatever digital device you're using.
Yep, that's a very good point.
So you need a sound card with 200 inputs, then.
Yeah, well,
if you're planning to record and, you know, 200 microphones, yeah, or something, yeah.
I suppose so.
No, I mean, you have every single piece of gear plugged into a different loop on your audio interface. That's sort of how I used to do it when I had a Digi 002. I had every single piece of gear plugged in and out of inputs and outputs and used to do all my patching in Pro Tools. But that means that you need to have as many inputs and outputs as you would on a patch bay. So I suppose you need 24 ins and 24 outs to be the same as a patch bay.
Mm. Well, they come in 24s and I can't remember what TTs are. I think I did invest in a TT patch at one point, and it took me a very long time to kind of plan it all out and then figure out whether I had whole, you know, but that's for fixed installation. I suppose I'm thinking, you know, there is a market for something that might do this that's more than 8x8.
The thing that I was thinking of that I've remembered is called an Anatech SMP16 programmable audio and MIDI patch bay. And it just has 16 ins and outs on the back of it and a whole load of relays in it. And you can program the whole thing and you just flip through different patches and it will reroute everything for you. But that was from a while ago. So whether you'd get one now.
I don't know. I found one here. Oh, it's on our site. Oh, that's brilliant. Our search. Excellent. That's awesome, isn't it? It's actually.
Surprise!
Wow, look at that. I'm Anatech SMP. Let's have a look. Oh, MIDI router cross.
Yeah,
cross,
so you route all of your MIDI, you route all of your
16x audio and MIDI. That looks cool. I like the idea of that. I don't know. It seems. I don't know. Dave, I mean, you've got a fixed installation. I mean, you don't have patch bay, though. You hardwire things and then submix and then bring them in, you know, that way, right?
Yep.
As much live as possible, really. Do you want to hear what I've just done?
Yeah, go on, then.
This is you in that Apple thing.
Thinking, you know, there is a market for something that might do this. That's thinking, you know, there is a market for something that might do this, that's
blinking,
you know, there is a
mark. Excellent. Do you like that?
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
That would be £10, please.
Excellent. Put it on iTunes, I'll split the revenue.
Yeah.
Or SoundCloud.
Bandcamp.
Well, I recommend Bandcamp. It's very easy to use. Anyway, I don't know, I think there's... I just feel like that there is a market for this somewhere, but I just don't understand.
I think really valid your points. Yes, definitely. I'm a bit disappointed that Gaz wasn't here because I was looking forward to him infusing effervescently over a box with jack plugs in it, jack sockets in it. for hours and hours going on about how it'll be the next amazing, it'll be amazing, amazing, amazing.
it's not that good.
I think there's, I mean, because we...
You can buy little 8-port patch bays off eBay for like 50 quid. So yeah. Just because it's got a picture of a brain on it, it doesn't make it.
No,
worth
I know.
More
no,
money.
I realise that. But
those green cables, maybe. But
I think the thing is also because this brought me back, and I know it brings me to the notion of the Artorio Matrix Brute, which has got basically a 64 matrix, and you press a button, you know, which is joining up two things, and you turn a knob, and you get the attenuation or the gain or whatever for each. And I think that as a thing with just in and out. Is what I'm talking about. I don't know whether that such a thing would exist, you know, but that seems like it would be a really cool thing. I mean, I would 16 by, I mean, I guess that's only 16 by 16, but if you could have, yeah, I suppose it starts to get complicated. It's the matrix that's the issue, isn't it? There are so many of them. Anyway, I suppose that would be kind of cool. But
if you did it digitally, it wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah, but
you
I don't
think... digital matrix. Forget the relays. Just do it digitally with a chip that with a very low latency on it.
But you'd have to convert all the audio, wouldn't you? You'd have to convert all the audio to digital and all the control... It wouldn't handle control voltages, I wouldn't imagine, if you wanted to do it that way.
I mean, I suppose the iConnect 4 audio interface is sort of a patch bay as well, isn't it?
Well, if 4's enough...
It's not, though, is it? So we need an iConnect 64, which we can plug all our synths and all our outboard into.
I guess we're just going to have to get massive kind of MADI-based RME systems with just kind of the breakout boxes that handle 64 or 128 channels of stuff, and then you just kind of have live switching between all of those. And if they're DC coupled as well, you can use it for squirting out control voltage and, you know, whatever. That would be the thing. I don't know. Dave, do you think... something that could be programmable routing for, say, modular, so everything's just plugged up, or, you know, you just decide you've got eight tails or whatever, and you just go, these are the things, so I can fix the, I can bring back the LFO speed exactly how it was, or I can bring back the envelope exactly how it was. Everything else, you know, I might have to do manually. But the idea of, because you could use it for recall as well. I know I've got a bit of a bug about this, and I just think there must be a way where it can be utilised.
Yeah. Well, you got inroads at Behringer, haven't you?
I'm not sure.
Aren't they the people that you're supposed to talk to about all of this? They can probably do it cheap enough.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I wonder. Programmable patch bay. Yeah, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll see if I can find someone to talk to. Anyway, gosh, that's probably... God, it's 20 past five. Good Lord. I've been waxing on about patch bays for such a long time. I can't believe I'm. I do apologise for the audience if you've fallen asleep. Let me just see. No, there's still quite a lot of people there. I haven't, and there's nobody shouting at me. Nick, will you shut up for God's sake? So that's probably good, right? I'm guessing. Anyway, so that's probably it for today.
We're not going to talk about this thing that I think's really exciting, then, are we?
What, that new synth?
Yeah.
No, we're not. Because no time, but we'll do it next time. But I'll tell you what, I have got, well, this is, we'll mention it briefly because I'm really pleased to see, when I brought the topic up, they were miles off their goal. This is the ST4 hybrid synthesizer tracker with a sampler built in from Dutch people based in Tasty Chips Electronics. And they've reached their goal. Because I thought they made a mistake there by saying it won't happen unless they get the full money. So they've actually made it, and they've got 3 hours to go, and they're €1,400 over. So that means that the project will live. And this is I think it's a four-channel polyphonic tracker stroke sampler synthesizer. So it looks like it could be kind of interesting. I don't think that's the final format, but maybe we'll talk about it next week if we get the chance. My warblings on patch bays has obviously been something that's just completely... Now, Dave, when I see you holding your phone up there, I immediately want to start talking rhythmically so that
music memo.
Yeah. Dave is doing some real-time music memo creations of my ramblings.
That's but really good.
Well, there you go. There's a use for it, isn't it? But before we go, I just say, don't forget, you can enter the competition to win Ozone 7. You just need to tweet the hashtag #FixTheMix and the hashtag #Ozone7. to at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. That's the hashtag Fix the Mix, and Ozone 7 to Sonic State and Isotope Inc. And you will enter, you'll be entered to win the competition. Enter, you know what I'm trying to say. Anyway, I want to say thank you very much to everybody for joining us. I'll come to Rich first because I'm sure he's got a private jet waiting to send him off to some studio where he's got to make some very great records. So thank you very much for joining us, Rich. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me.
Jolly good. And we'll say thank you very much to Mark Tinley also for joining us as well. It's been very enjoyable. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm still on patch base myself. I'm so confused by this, but there you go.
Well, they do tend to, when planning a patch bay, it does tend to take over one's life. I remember, you know, spreadsheets and thinking about it forever. Then you go, oh, no, what about this? I've forgotten the blah, blah, blah input I need. And all that needs to be normalized. Oh, no, what, you know, you've got planning a patch bay.
And then
bay.
You need to move it all around, don't you? Yeah,
planning a patch bay is one of life's more tedious occupations, I think. But anyway, Mark.
And then once you've finished, it's all crackly anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, then you got to do, well, no, I was
take
okay
take it all
with
apart and spray it with switch cleaner.
No, what it is you then, once you've done your patch bay, you've got like half a hundredweight of 24-channel multi-track cable dangling off the back of it.
Yeah.
And it's just
hanging off the back, yeah.
And it's not, and then you realise, actually, I need to move something from this side of the room to that side of the room, and there's, you know, you haven't got enough cable because you
wire's not long enough.
Yeah, the wire's not long enough, and then you need, to make it long enough, you need another 30 foot of really expensive per meter multi-pair cable. Anyway, I won't go on about it. Thanks for joining us, Mark.
Well, then you say to the band, look, I've worked out how we're going to do the patch bay. My mate's going to come in and solder it all up. Oh, okay. How much does he charge? Oh, he's like £30 an hour. Oh, okay. So how much would it be? Oh, I don't know, about £400. What? Why is it going to be that much? Well, he's going to be here for 2 days soldering.
Yeah, I pity his thumb and forefinger. Yeah. I've been there.
Little burnt fingers.
Absolutely. So, well, anyway, thank you very much, Mark. And also I want to say thank
you very
much to Dave as well. Thank you for joining us, Dave. It's been a pleasure. Your internet is officially held up. So I think that's good, right?
It's a miracle. So I've got like BT and Virgin, because if one goes down, I might go to the other, and one's home and one's business. And they just kind of both went down at the same time.
Oh, no.
So that was joyous. Anyway, I'm glad it held up. And thank you very much.
That's it. You're more than welcome. And I think I had this little bit of... Just in homage to you being reunited with your 8 voice. Oh, no. There we are.
Right. That's enough, miss.
That's
do
enough.
You know what?
That.
They didn't use it that much.
Oh, really?
No, there was kind of too many people and not enough time. And the star turn said, actually, if I'd had it at home, I could have delved into it and done something amazing with it because it sounded amazing. But I think there was just kind of too many people coming in and out of the studio. Usual thing.
Yeah, well, if you are going to be, that's the problem about being in a studio and having to watch the clock a little bit. Anyway, Dave, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, thank you, Rich. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, chat room. Thank you, everybody. That is Sonic Talk number 437. Sorry, I got a bit number dyslexic there. Over and out.
Back several years.
Yes. See you next time.